longest march. Candy won, Candy won. Many stones can form an arch. Singly done, singly done. And by union what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill. Singly done, singly done. Step by step, the longest march. Candy won, Candy won. Many stones can form an arch. Singly done, singly done. And by union what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill. Singly done, singly done.
Usually how it works, folks, step by step and in union. This is Chris. The show is called Peace and Justice. We're on with you every Friday with rotating hosts, and I'm very pleased to be here at KZFR and to have this opportunity to bring you the amazing people that I get to bring you. I have on the line with me Michael Beer. He has been Director of Nonviolence International since 1998. Michael is a global activist for human rights, minority rights, and argues against war and casino capitalism. He has trained activists in many countries, including Myanmar, Kosovo, Tibet, Indonesia, Thailand, Cambodia, India, Zimbabwe, and the United States. He's a frequent public speaker on nonviolence and has been broadcast on all the major media outlets. He wrote a book that we'll be discussing somewhat today. It's called Civil Resistance Tactics in the 21st Century, which is free, which is amazing, on the website of nonviolenceinternational.net /NV_book. Anyway, you can get there just by going nonviolenceinternational.net. Welcome to the Peace and Justice program, Michael. Oops. Hey, are you there? Well, I thought I had him. So anyway, this is the Peace and Justice show. I'm going to call him back. I'm going to go ahead and give you a little more of John McCutcheon. It looks like that song's almost over. Let's go to another song here, though, with John McCutcheon. I have no idea what the next song in the CD is, so it'll be something fabulous. Here you go.
My life flows on in endless song. Above earth's lamentation, I hear the real though far of him that hails a new creation. No storm can shake my inmost calm while to that rock I'm clinging. It sounds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing? What though the darkness round me falls, I know the truth, it liveth. And what though the tempest round me roars, songs in the night it giveth. No storm can shake my inmost calm while to that rock I'm clinging. It sounds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing?
All right. How can I keep from singing? Michael Bear, do I have you on the line?
Yes. Oh. It's great to hear John McCutcheon and these wonderful singers.
Yeah, he is wonderful. And I did introduce you while you were somewhere else. we don't know what happened, but we're just grateful to be together here on the Peace and Justice Show. I would just like to tell you that I've been reading the nonviolencenews.org. I didn't realize, I'm just putting the dots together here about how big the Nonviolence International movement is. And I wanted to ask you about your founding, because your founder himself is so interesting. It was Palestinian activist Mubarak Awad in 1989. Can you tell us about yourselves, Nonviolence International?
Sure. And indeed, the nonviolence movement around the world is very exciting, and we're seeing nonviolence and nonviolent action happen every day in every single country of the world. It's a really a global phenomenon on an enormous scale, and nobody can quite wrap their heads around it, but we're trying to do what we can to promote it and advance nonviolent social change and the ideas of nonviolence. It was started by Dr. Mubarak Awad in 1989. He had been a leader in the first intifada against the Israeli occupation of the Palestinians, and they kicked him out. And he says, I'm just not for nonviolence in Palestine. I'm for nonviolence everywhere and wants to promote it everywhere. And I came on soon after he started it. And we've been promoting nonviolence around the world through training, through education, through research, advocacy in so many different countries and so many different manifestations, whether at the very big political levels of governments and bringing down dictators, or working in communities against gang violence and at the interpersonal level to try to promote more nonviolent and healthy interactions among communities and people. So it's a vibrant field. Many of your listeners have been part of it in many ways, and we need a vibrant nonviolent universe and world and communities to really get ahead of some of our problems that we have, whether it's climate change or whether it's militarism or whether it's mafia capitalism or so many other problems that we've got. And yes, we're going to try to use the court system, and yes, we're going to try to use our legislative institutions and get the right people in office, but we need grassroots movements and people to speak up and build up, because change comes from more than just in the courts and in the laws.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned this nonviolence news. If folks would just check that once, you probably won't have that in your inbox. It's called nonviolencenews.org. Every single day, the editor Rivera-Sun posts what's happening around the world. This is much bigger than we ever get in the news that we, you know, hear on the TV. So I appreciate your role in that.
I agree with you. Rivera-Sun's Nonviolent News is absolutely amazing. And it still just scratches the surface of what's going on in terms of nonviolent action around the world. But if you want to really be plugged into mostly feel-good stories, it's not always great outcomes. But if you want to really be plugged into what people are doing around the world, particularly at the grassroots level, that doesn't always rise to the level of getting into the mainstream news for various reasons, I would strongly recommend getting onto her feed. And it's just a great, great effort that she's putting forward.
Yeah, I just wanted to plug that. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your book, which I haven't read, but I did go online and read some of the work that you've done. There was a man named Gene Sharp who gave us, you know, before the Civil Rights Movement, I think it was 148. No, he gave us 198 tactics to use for civil resistance, and you have added 148 additional tactics. And I went online and looked at some of them, and it's quite a list, and I can't, of course, say them all, but like, my listeners might want to know things like image theater, rebel clowning, nonviolent land seizures, reverse strikes, pie-ins, pray-ins, Overloading facilities, citizen inspections, boycotts, spreading rumors. Anyway, I want you to talk about how does your mind work and why do you think that way? No, that's not the question. The question is, tell us about Gene Sharp. Tell us about why this is so important in a strategic campaign for nonviolence to have these tactics.
Well, Gene Sharp was a major researcher about nonviolent action in the 20th century, and he came up with a whole lot of nonviolent actions and kind of organized them in very interesting ways. And we've built on that work and added a whole lot more. And, of course, we have now the digital revolution and so many ways that people can be engaged in nonviolent action online and through the Internet and whatnot. So it's a extremely vibrant universe. The effort on our part is partly a collection effort, just trying to collect a lot that's out there to show people that there's a big toolbox. Very often, the biggest enemy for people is not the dictator or the unjust system, but despair. We feel despair. We don't feel like our vote matters. We're economically disenfranchised. We're can't make it through the courts or whatever, but nonviolent action is an area where we can try to assert our power and make for change. And if you only feel like you can do five things, there are only five things you can do, then maybe, you know, you won't even try. But if you feel like there are hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of things to look at, maybe that's something that might inspire you. So we don't mean to overwhelm people with this huge database of tactics. Not our intention, although it is overwhelming at times. But we have stories. We want you to click on the go to tactics.nonviolenceinternational.net, which is the tactics database. And you can click on a tactic and see a photograph of it, perhaps. And then we have examples of stories about how these tactics were used, and they can really vary a great deal. There are... You've mentioned some already that are very interesting. Boycotts are a wonderful tactic that are used, in which you actually, instead of boycotting, which is refusing to buy something from somebody, a boycott would be to try to campaigns and efforts to buy from companies or those products or services that you really like and want to support. So fair trade coffee or union-made goods are things that you can boycott. You can actually go out there and use your money in an affirmative, constructive way to support those causes and those people and those groups that you really like to support. So there's, and one of the things we do in our big tactics database, and I do in my book, is I really do divide up the universe of nonviolent tactics into things that are constructive, like a boycott, and those things that are confrontational. We tend to focus a lot on the confrontational because a lot of nonviolent action is disruptive in some way, either disruptive of the way things are normally done or disruptive content in terms of the views that you're expressing that disrupt society. So there is this kind of positive and negative or constructive and confrontational universe of action that we want to encourage people to be thinking about when they go do their campaigns or want to organize their community.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions that came up as I was thinking about this for myself. And first of all, that strategic nonviolence requires study, discipline, and organizational cohesion. And it's sometimes when you look at things like the tactics in isolation, they just might be quirky and fun to read about and, you know, historically interesting. But the larger movement of people is, I'm wondering how we can get this to people. How do we reach people? Since so many people are not reading the same sources now, and the people that are actually engaged in struggle, you know, Black Lives Matter, and, you know, people all over the world doing important work for justice and against war, you know, are they finding this database of the of all this this compilation of incredible information you've brought together?
Yes and no. It's only in English. And we are getting a lot of people coming from the English-speaking universe to go see it. And we do, in our database, try to make it as global as possible with examples from all over the world and not make it a U.S.-centered one. And this is important going forward. Nonviolence was not exactly invented in the United States. It's something that we see all over the world, but Gandhi certainly has a the first among equals in terms of in the modern era, those who have really put forward nonviolent action and nonviolence as a kind of idea and a way of struggle and a way of asserting power. So despite this fact, there are a whole lot of resources that are kind of American and U.S.-centric. And in order to reach the world, we really need to globalize nonviolence and come up and show all of the examples that there are all over the world in so many different countries. So that's something we would invite all of your listeners to contribute to. If you know of examples of really interesting tactics that have been done in certain parts of the world, particularly not in the U.S., we would love to hear about it, and we can include these as examples in our database.
So are you interested, if any of our listeners are fluent in any of the world languages, them contacting you if they're willing to take on some translation of materials?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. This is a constant a challenge, and we would invite all of you to contact us. And you can contact us at info@nonviolenceinternational.net. info@nonviolenceinternational.net. And we'd be happy to work with you.
That's wonderful. So let me ask you my other thorny question. It's kind of a long one because I just I've been just hearing about this quote-unquote through line about right-wing extremist attacks, violence being up 320% in the last 5 years. And you know, we know in our own country what sort of got this going, but that there's, you know, there is no group that hasn't been infected. You know, the Tree of Life massacre, the, you know, what happened to Muslim people in Christchurch, Atlanta, Orlando, El Paso, Buffalo now, which is the last horrible tragedy. And I was wondering, the internet seems to be deeply implicated in this. And I guess my question for you is, one of the leading scholars and conveners of nonviolence study and work around the globe, how do you see those of us who could never even think about punching somebody in the face, much less going out and buying a AR-15, you know, those of us who are the broad spectrum of humanity who would never kill somebody, how can we live in this world and stop this rising tide of hate?
Well, I don't have my magic answer for your audience. I think everybody in listening is aware of the downsides of modern social media, where everybody has a bullhorn, and where a lot of the community's discussion is not mediated through a newspaper or through kind of a local paper or through local media that is has professional editors or journalists who play something of a mediating role. Nonviolent direct action has always been something where people speak out directly and bypass the newspapers and the media and the mainstream media in a way. And so there's a lot of value in encouraging people to speak out. You know, it's the whole freedom of speech thing, but we want to enable people to feel like they're heard and can speak out, even on media, even if they're saying hateful things. And we're seeing this all over the world right now. Lots of misinformation, lots of right-wing hateful kind of rhetoric, particularly in most societies, it's almost always directed at marginalized peoples.
Right.
Whichever kind of community in that It changes from society to society, but there's a real attack on marginalized peoples as a way to gain power and to gain to be heard. You mentioned the massacre in New Zealand, or Aotearoa, and that's quite unusual. And in fact, after that attack happened, they, I think, banned assault weapons completely. And the overwhelming number of these massacres are happening in the United States, and it's not because we have a lot more hate-filled rhetoric online than they do around the world. Why is it that we're almost up to 200 mass shootings here in this country just this year alone? And yet, that's probably more than most of the world, rest of the world combined. So there's an issue of hateful rhetoric. It's a real problem around the world, but there's also the issue of why are we having the mass shootings and killings? And that's, of course, because we have massive gun pollution in this country. We have an extremely sick society in which we have 400 million guns floating around, the 18 to 20 million new ones being sold every year into the population. And we have just that, and of course, this is a cycle of violence. All your listeners know that this is the case. We have vast pollution problem, and until we get a handle on this and see it as a public health problem, the hateful rhetoric and whatnot is going to manifest itself in deadly, horrifying ways, as we've seen in Buffalo and in so many other communities around this country.
I'm speaking with Michael Beer. I only have 3 more minutes with him, so I had 2 more questions. And unfortunately, I wanted to talk to you about Peter Ackerman, about nonviolence tactics. He wrote a book called Checklist to End Tyranny, which if you could just briefly talk to our listeners about, because I have one more question for you.
Yes, please. Everybody, it's a free book. You can get a free paper copy or a free online copy from the International Center for Nonviolent Conflict website. He died just recently, quite suddenly and unexpectedly. He wrote this book that's really, really excellent book on how to take on dictators. There's a great webinar. We did the book launch for his book just last year. You can find that on the Nonviolence International website. And I would recommend all of you, particularly those of you who are worried about fighting tyrants around the world, to read this book and to approach ICNC for trainings around this book.
Michael Beer, my last question is about Nonviolence International Ukraine. Can you just tell us about that group and what they are seeking?
Yes, Nonviolence International, we're very concerned about occupations around the world, whether it's in Palestine or whether it's in Western Sahara or whether it's in Ukraine. And we can't stop war unless we stop governments from seizing neighboring territory. And NI Ukraine is really working to support the war resistance movement in Russia. And we've come up with a messaging that is appropriate to persuade the people in Russia. And we're testing out these messages now in Russia to oppose the war that is being imposed on Ukraine. So I invite everybody to come to the Nonviolence International website, learn about the work we're doing to try to prevent war and to use nonviolent struggle to defeat tyrants and to create the world that we need to live in and to survive.
I really appreciate your work. And I we have now a minute left, so I know that was sort of a wrap-up statement that you just made, but is there anything else that is kind of a burning issue with you that you just want to share with listeners here?
Well, yes. The United States government is very hypocritical because we're very upset when Russia invades Ukraine and grabs territory. But the United States has been deeply complicit in Israel's grabbing territory in West Jerusalem and in the Golan, and U.S. supporting this annexation, as well as supporting the annexation of Morocco, of West Sahara by Morocco. And this was all done, particularly in the Morocco situation, with strong U.S. support. And this is just outrageous that our country government would be so hypocritical, and we want everybody to be concerned about Ukraine, but also be concerned about these other countries where the U.S. has been on the opposite end of what international law should be. And we need to stop these occupations wherever they are, because we'll never end war unless we stop the acquisition of territory by neighboring countries.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael Beer, for your work. Also, I want to remind people that they to learn more, go to nonviolenceinternational.net. There's much to be gained there. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you so much.
Peace.
All the best.
Okay, folks, amazing, wonderful work that I've been doing peace work for a very long time, and still I find so much I don't know. Here I am reading Nonviolence News because I know Rivera's son, but I didn't ever look at this parent organization, and now I want to, of course, find out more about the checklist and tyranny and so much more about what they're doing, important group that, you know, we need to have the bandwidth to learn from nonviolenceinternational.net. Okay, so we're going to be going on to the next guest here in a minute. I'm trying to see what my announcements are. One sec. Well, I don't think I mentioned that John McCutcheon is coming to Chico, and I wanted to do that. He'll be here on June 4th, and tickets are available at Eventbrite, and he will be at the El Rey Theater. So that's one thing I know I wanted to say. So I guess I'll just go straight into thanking underwriters, and I do thank you so much, all of you who helped to keep KZFR strong. And anybody can become an underwriter. I think we have a promo about that, but I'm not going to play it for you right now. But, you know, we'd love to have your support as an underwriter so we could, you know, read what you have to say about your business or your activity. So starting right now, Patrick Riley, I'd like to thank, a real estate professional with Century 21 Select, specializing in properties in Chico and Butte Meadows. Patrick is dedicated to helping buyers and sellers achieve their real estate goals with kind, quality service. Patrick can be reached at 588-6593 and on Facebook. Also like to thank Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services for private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. Also like to thank Garibaldi's New Orleans Cuisine. Chef Kevin Garibaldi presents his Creole heritage by offering authentic Cajun dishes, including gumbo, jambalaya, shrimp, po'boys, tri-tip, and more at 1250 East Avenue, Suite 30, with dine-in, takeout, and curbside pickup. For the full menu, visit catertourtaste.com or Facebook, on Facebook, or by calling 530-566-2447. Garibaldi's, A Taste of New Orleans, right here in Chico. Catering also available. And also, the bankruptcy law offices of Michael O. Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael O. Hayes offers complimentary consultations and payment plans for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. For more information, visit chicobk.com or 530-892-8916. So I think we have time to play this John McCutcheon promo. Let's do that. Hang on.
Join KZFR Chico and the El Rey Theater for an evening of music with the one and only John McCutcheon on Saturday, June 4th. It's been several years since John McCutcheon's return to Chico, and your favorite community radio station has teamed up with the El Rey Theater, dedicated to becoming Chico's premier music venue to bring a night that you will not forget. John McCutcheon has emerged as one of our most respected and beloved folk singers. This is an all-ages show, so bring the family. The doors open at 6:30 and the show starts at 7:30.
You're gonna be friends, you're gonna have to learn how to play fair. You got to do the right thing, play fair. You got to show me you care.
John McCutcheon is folk music's Renaissance man and living legend. A master instrumentalist, powerful singer-songwriter, storyteller, activist, and author. Tickets are available today by visiting lraychico.com and also by visiting kzfr.org JohnMcCutcheon. Tickets are $20 in advance and $25 at the door.
All right, thank you, Grant, for that. It's 12 o'clock straight up. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers, just mine and my guests. Let's go to hear a little living history here, I would say. Imagine John Lennon. Let's see. Okay, that always touches my heart. I have Kathy Kelly on the line with me. She is the president of the board of World Beyond War, and that's just since this spring. She has been working for peace, however, I think all of her adult life. In 1988, Kathy planted corn on an ICBM site in Missouri and earned herself a year in prison. She has had many imprisonments for civil disobedience, and her efforts to end war and have led her to live in war zones and since for about 35 years. She was part of Voices for Creative Nonviolence delegations and led them for years to Afghanistan and Pakistan, other places. And she is currently the co-coordinator of the Ban Killer Drones campaign. And Kathy, welcome to the Peace and Justice program. I could go on and on about you.
Oh, it's very good to be on your program. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah. So right now, I think I want to start with Ukraine. $40 billion has just been approved to be sent to Ukraine, which is a total of $54 billion. Most of this is in the form of military aid. And I wanted to, for the people of our area, to hear one of the leading peace advocates of our time. I know you've been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize many times. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the war in Ukraine, please.
Well, I think that every war should be covered with as much media intensity and buildup of empathy for victims as the war in Ukraine has been covered with in the mainstream media. But that's just not the case. There are wars raging in many places all around the planet, and the United States has itself been the aggressor and the invader in numerous wars that have cost the lives of innocent people. Children have not only been slaughtered, but also starved as a result of U.S. policies. So certainly none of this justifies Putin's invasion of Ukraine, Moscow's continuance and prolonging of the war. But I believe that heaping up weapons in Ukraine is also going to prolong and exacerbate a war that is causing horrendous bereavement and displacement. Children are becoming orphans. Children are not surviving. And worldwide, there are many, many repercussions, particularly with regard to the skyrocketing food prices elsewhere in the world, as people who depended on grain from that part of the world can't get that grain. And so there are so many reasons to press for negotiation, to call for a ceasefire. The Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, proposed this, and he even went to Russia and met with President Putin of Russia, despite the opposition of the West. Pope Francis has urged a ceasefire. He's called for negotiations, and he said that the weapons should be silenced so that the people who can do something about this war can hear the cry of humanity for peace. The presidents of Italy, of France, and of Germany have all urged a ceasefire and negotiations. Why is the United States choosing instead to pour more money into Ukraine for weapons? Do they want to weaken Germany? Is that the point? I'm sorry, weaken Russia. Is that the point? Then when you think about proxy wars being fought and the fact that we can now fight these wars with drones and not a hair on the head of anybody in the United States military will be harmed, but there is great moral injury for the drone operators, some of whom commit suicide. There's so much to think about, and these issues are not raised in our mainstream media.
No, they're not. And you brought up the issue of drones, and there was an article in Intercept about that the United States is considering sending over the Reaper drones that are flown at Creech Air Force Base to Ukraine. And that is so escalatory. I just cannot imagine why that would happen. But can you speak more about how drones are currently being used in Ukraine?
Well, right now, the Switchblade drone, apparently you can fit 100 of these drones in a large suitcase, is being used. And, you know, generally those drones hover over a particular individual as a target. So they can be used for assassination, for instance. But the Reaper drone requires about 100 people to operate it. It's not a simple piece of technology. It's very, very complex, and people often need at least a year of training. And so if the United States were to move in that direction, almost certainly there would have to be either U.S. military people on the ground in Ukraine, or there would be U.S. military people training Ukrainians elsewhere in the region. But you can't do it with just a simple team. It's a complex piece of technology, and there have to be multiple interactive teams. And it's so wrongful, I think, because the more we have proliferation of drones, the easier and easier it gets to kill. And who benefits?
Yeah.
Well, General Atomics, for one. You know, that's a company that's made huge profits. And also, this is moving us closer and closer to the idea of not only unmanned aerial vehicles, but weapons that don't involve any human at all, that are completely reliant on artificial intelligence. And in war games that the United States has played out, pitting the United States against China and imagining the use of these artificial intelligence weapons, the U.S. always loses. And so that has actually prompted one particular military leader in the United States, whose name is Admiral Charles Richard, to say that in the event of a military entanglement with China, nuclear weapons would not be a possibility. Recourse to nuclear weapons would not be a possibility. It would be a probability, because that's the only way the U.S. could get the upper hand, given the superiority of Chinese scientific ability and technical know-how. So this is a very, very alarming statement to think about, you know, that the United States would comprehend crossing that nuclear threshold. And some have even begun to wonder, is the war in Ukraine actually meant to sort of be a preparing for another eventual war? Because, you know, immediately after the United States withdrew troops from Afghanistan, certainly didn't declare peace with Afghanistan, but withdrew troops, the United States immediately started talking about going to war with China. So we are such a forever war nation now, a warrior nation, a menacing nation. And it's not true that every nation on earth supports what the United States is doing in Ukraine.
Yeah. You know, I've been talking with peace activists on this program since February about this very same issue and the fact that, you know, we are at risk of a nuclear war. Everything that we're doing is escalating the situation. And yet the peace movement does not seem to be turning up. There does not seem to be a level. I mean, I think people are anxious about it, but I don't see activism emerging. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about your work with World Beyond War and anything else that you're seeing that might be helpful in terms of how people are organizing to have their voices heard against the insanity of what may be coming.
Well, I think, Chris, you're right that there hasn't been near enough peace movement activism demanding an end to the war and maintaining neutrality for the countries that already have it, and some are quite likely to lose it soon. But I think that Finland and Sweden declaring their intent to join the NATO alliance really has been a kind of a rude push to other countries in Europe and activists in Finland and Sweden to say, we've got to take this very, very seriously and start to take action. And so there is there's an unusual action planned on June 25th. And I know that's far away, but it is taking in stock the fact that there will be a summit in Madrid of military powers, and it's a NATO summit. And so this is going to be designed to give approval for a counter summit that will be held in Madrid. And so on June 25th, from the entire day for 24 hours, there will be a constant wave of actions happening and being videotaped and presented live streaming and YouTube. And World Beyond War is organizing this with the International Peace Bureau. And so when I say 24 hours, you know, it's really interesting. There are 12 different time blocks, and for each of those 12 different time blocks, people are organizing now to have at least 30 minutes of music and entertainment, poetry, and then a good 90 minutes of presentation, but to keep the balance between presentation and ideally there would be rallies, and if people are speaking, they'll be speaking at a rally, and it'll be colorful and it'll be active. So I tell you all this because if people in the West Coast would like to participate, the time frame for them is between 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. on June 25th. So I'm really hoping that some of the fine, fine West Coast activists, I think about the Code Pink activists and the Ban Killer drone activists and the many people who have for years protested nuclear weapons. I'm hoping that these groups will come together, and one way to do it is to get in touch with World Beyond War. This peace wave will be thoroughly described on the website, but the main purpose is to call for dismantling all militaries all around the world, speak out against these dangerous alliances and press for peace and cooperation. But in a more immediate time frame, there's a draft that will be released. I'm sorry, there's a document that will be released on Monday. It's been drafted now by David Swanson, who's a very fine writer. And it's a petition calling for more nations to support a way out of the war in Ukraine. And then I can also say that the Ban Killer Drones campaign has been drafting a three-minute presentation that we hope celebrities will consider presenting, and then that could be made on YouTube. But that's still in the works. But, you know, I think we have to certainly join with people all around the world who want the warring parties to declare an immediate ceasefire. Certainly the United States should announce that it's never going to use nuclear weapons in Ukraine and work to achieve that guarantee from Russia and other nuclear powers. We should discontinue sending weapons and military personnel into Ukraine and work with Russia and other European nations to do the same. And I think that we certainly should discontinue any military and political support for individuals and groups that are advocating white supremacy and Nazism. That's certainly true as well. And then I think we should pledge to join with all the parties to the war in assisting with refugees from Ukraine and rebuilding. But, you know, the United States should also recognize that, you know, we owe reparations. Right. To the countries that we invaded and occupied.
Right. Speaking with Kathy Kelly, she's the president of the board of World Beyond War and a longtime activist in Afghanistan with Voices for Creative Nonviolence. And 5 months, only 5 months, since the war in Ukraine started, the war in Afghanistan ended, but there has been so much injustice in regards to the promise of our country to the people who we worked with in that country. And I'd like to shift, if we could, to Afghanistan, because I know we're going to run out of time, because I do want to ask you about your other work with Ban Killer Drones. Kathy Kelly, can you tell us about what you're hearing from Afghanistan?
Well, the challenge to find food has become increasing daily. It's dreadful. 1 million children are now facing severe acute malnourishment in Afghanistan. And when the United States froze Afghanistan's assets and said that the central bank couldn't function anymore, it pushed the economy toward collapse. And, of course, the Taliban repression has also been very, very difficult on people who have lost their jobs or who have had to go into hiding. But, you know, right now, I'm in touch with young women who say not only are they very, very fearful of harassment from the Taliban and see that their lives are, you know, changing dramatically because they can't go outside unless they're wearing the burqa and they can't travel and they can't go to school, but also because of the shortage of food, families are grappling with how to cope, and they need to create conditions where there are less mouths to feed. And so a custom that we had hoped been something more of the past is now becoming more practiced, and that is to sell the young girls into marriages. And the idea that people are just going to get so worn out and become hungry and just be sitting on the roadside waiting to die is a hideous thing for us to do to Afghanistan. We've already caused so much slaughter and destruction and bereavement and dismay, and people that were carted off to Guantanamo and tortured in black sites and fearful constantly of drone attacks. What we've done to that country has been despicable. And yet now the United States is so ready to walk away and then say to U.S. civilians, okay, look, you deal with it, okay? Form groups and raise $20,000, and that's what you're going to need just to begin to help one refugee. But it's not really our problem. I think the United States has demonstrated such a different way of coping with refugee crises, which we cause, than what we've seen with people who've said to Ukrainians, if they're white-skinned Ukrainians, basically, come in. There's a room in my house. People have been very willing to welcome people. But the United States makes it so very, very difficult for someone to come to this country. And so I'm in touch every day with young Afghans who are pleading, can't you do something to help us?
Yeah, I don't know how you handle that because it's so hopeless in some ways. But I know you've had some successes. Are you able to talk about some things that you've been able to accomplish?
Well, I'm so impressed by people in a small city in southern Portugal, the city of Mercola. They have received eight young Afghans who are part of this volunteer group that I had been a guest of, that had welcomed me and others as guests for such a long time. And they've welcomed them to be part of a permaculture project. They're getting scholarships to study permaculture, and they've got a place to live. In fact, just right this weekend, they're having an Islamic festival, and the young people are painting murals and doing historical presentations about their faith. And it's been a wonderful experience, a lot of work to make it happen, but it really is a profoundly wonderful thing. And four of our young friends are in Germany and studying German and getting ready to go to university, and that also took a great deal of careful planning and a long stretch, but they're there. And then five, it looks like, will get into Canada, but only because their names were on a list very, very shortly after the Taliban takeover. But, we're looking to countries like Brazil, possibly. Maybe there might be an eventual possibility for more to go to Brazil. We're looking at the Caribbean countries, wishing, hoping that some countries would start to say, we would like to welcome Afghans to come and be with us.
Yeah.
But also maybe, there has to be an initiative to get seeds and implements and start to rehabilitate the land, the orchards, and the land that could be cultivated in Afghanistan, because you can't, displace the whole country. The other thing that's, of course, a problem is there's so much ordnance littered all across the land, and that then, of course, brings us to the question of drone warfare. And because I think you might know that on August 29th, right, after the suicide bombing at the Hamid Karzai International Airport, President Biden, immediately after that suicide bombing, had said, "We will never forgive you, we will never forget, we will find you." And 13 United States military members were killed. 170 Afghans were killed. It was a terrible, terrible thing. But in the effort to find a culprit, the United States tracked for 8 hours a completely innocent civilian. They got it wrong, and they kept confirming their own bias. This man, his name is Zemarai Ahmadi, worked for a U.S. NGO in California, Nutrition Education International. And his bags were packed to go to the United States because of his visa that he had been eligible for. And on his last day in Kabul, because he thought he was going to the United States the next day, he had the company car and he drove errands all over the place. He picked up water for his family and gingerly placed it in the trunk, and that was after he'd picked up a computer that his boss had forgotten and brought it to the office and dropped off coworkers. And this was a group that was planning soup kitchens in various refugee camps, so there were all kinds of errands. And the United States just completely got it wrong, said, "Oh, he went to an Islamic State safe house. Oh, he's picking up explosives and putting them in the back of the car." And so when he drove into the driveway of his own home, and in that family there was a tradition, when dad came home with the car, then all the kids would pour out and dad would let one of the older boys park the car and the kids would all watch. And so the kids came out and the drone overhead had targeted Zemarai Ahmadi, and the drone fired a Hellfire missile, 100 pounds of molten lead landed on that car, and instantly killed Zemaray Ahmadi, and 10 of his family were killed. The three of them toddlers, 7 of them children.
Kathy Kelly.
The United States didn't apologize.
I know. Kathy Kelly, we have to end, but I wanted to just, people who want to be involved in banning these drones in this program, how can they do that?
Oh, they can go to bankillerdrones.org, and then they can send a postcard to Antonio Guterres through the website and get more postcards to distribute. They can be put in touch with regular actions that are happening all along the West Coast, and they'd be so welcome to join us. We meet twice a month by Zoom on Sundays, and we'd love to have more participation from folks in California and in Chico.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kathy Kelly, for all of your work, and thank you for telling the story of the Ahmadi family. I know that a lot of activists have told that story, but I haven't heard it told. I always love your stories because they bring it to life for me, and I hope for our listeners that they now see the horror of drone strikes, and it's happened over and over and over again. Thank you so much for your work.
Well, thank you for calling today. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, folks, Peace and Justice Program. Again, we're going to have rotating hosts for the next few weeks. I'll be back in July. Juneteenth is coming up on June 18th from 3 to 7, Martin Luther King Jr. Park, which is at the corner of B and Burlington and Oroville. And they have free info and vendor booths if you want one, but you have to reserve it by May 31st. And the number to call to reserve a booth is 532-1205. All right, I'm going to put on some Emma's Revolution and get our last guest on the line. Here you go.
To the converted, I want to see them rising up. Don't want to see one gaze averted. Don't want to have to prove a point. Just want to know they're on my side. Just want to smile and inspire. Has anybody seen the choir? Church, maybe that's where I can find them, standing tall against the frame, strength and unity behind them. Have they gathered at the river? Are they washed upon the shore? Have they set the world on fire? Has anybody seen the choir?
Choir. And, you know, after the last interview, I was feeling really sad, but I love Emma's Revolution because they always can shift me out of it, and I appreciate that group so much. Such good people. But I have on the line with me Andrea Mox Miller. She's the executive director of Stonewall Chico. Andrea has more than 32 years of collaborative management and strategic leadership experience, spending her first 25 years at Chico State and another 8 years at Butte College. Being part of the LGBTQ plus community and holding influential positions in the Chico area, she has considered it her responsibility to push for progressive change at the two institutions at which she was employed. Using her professional influence along with her strong commitment to social and racial justice, she has worked to improve the lives of students on and off Chico State and Butte College campuses. She became the executive director of Stonewall in the last year, and she has brought all that organizational skill to it after the help that she received from the same organization that helped her and her family navigate her own coming out more than 20 years ago. Welcome, Andrea Mox-Miller. How are you?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Mixed. Thank you.
Mixed. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. So this is an important time of year, and I got hold of you because I really want to be able to have a wonderful Pride this year. And Pride is, you know, I think on your website it says Pride, the first Stonewall Pride was a riot. So anyway,
right.
tell us a little bit about Stonewall Chico and your involvement with it. I know you're relatively new here, but I know you've also had to administer during COVID. So what is this standing right now? What kind of programs are you offering?
Yeah, we're still offering most of our programs. But, you know, a little history about Stonewall Chico. We've been around since 1990, so over 30 years. And we're really the largest LGBTQ center north of Sacramento. And so we do serve, you know, anywhere north of Sacramento, up to the Oregon borders and to the east as well. So we do provide a lot of significant services. I think a lot of people, when they think of Stonewall, they think of Pride because, you know, obviously those are our big events for the years. But we definitely provide other services such as counseling and advocacy work, and we do workshops and trainings. We go to schools and help schools set up safe affirming spaces and GSAs. We have groups for participants of all flavors, right? So we have groups for trans folks. We have groups for parents. We have LGBTQ teens. We have young adults. And our most recent group that we started back up is called the Queer Otters. So for autistic folks or folks who feel like they're on the spectrum, we've got an LGBT group for them. And then probably one of the most enjoyable groups because they're wild and a little bit squirrely is the Daring Dinos. And we've got ages 4 through 12. And their parents that join in for that particular group. So it is really fun when I'm in center and they come thundering down the hallway and squeal with delight. It's really great.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Sounds very lively and fun. Yeah, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about not only what's going to be happening, but what your needs are. So let's maybe start with, can you give us the idea of what the week's going to be like?
Sure. Well, actually, we're going to do an entire month of Pride. So we're going to have events all throughout June. Our main event is going to be on June 11th, and that is going to be another pop-up vendor, artists performing, all sorts of fun stuff. And it's going to, again, be in the Stonewall parking lot. That seems to feel like a very safe venue for folks, and seems like people feel like they can really be free and out and true to their true person in that kind of more secluded space. So right now we have almost 50 vendors signed up, and we have lots of performers that are going to be on tap, have food booths and everything else. So it's going to be a really fun day. So I encourage everybody to come on down and check everything out. That'll be great. We're also going to be doing a drag storybook hour for the younger kiddos, and that should be a lot of fun. That was very successful last year. And then we also will be having another teen dance this year, too. In addition, we're adding back in some adult venues. So we're going to have a couple of our local bars, Bill's and Gnarly Deli, they're going to be sponsoring and hosting some really fun events, like a drag brunch and also kind of a music venue night. So got lots of things in the queue right now. We're still finalizing everything, and we are still looking for volunteers. So if you want to come along and volunteer for Pride, it's really an enjoyable time. We need folks who will kind of help us with safety, just making sure all of our spaces are safe and nothing is going on that shouldn't be. And then also we just need folks to help us out with event coordination and things like that. One of our other things we're going to do is we're also going to have a picnic, kind of bring your own brunch to the park. We're going to have music, and we're going to have some other fun activities going on. Can't quite do the big Pride brunch of years past with the fabulous Ann Leon. That's not on the queue right now, but we're definitely going to commandeer some space so we can make sure all the community can get together and have some fun.
So I'm speaking with Andrea Mox Miller, and you used to go by Mox, right? That's
correct.
Okay.
Yeah, Andrea Mox.
Okay. Andrea, you're also looking for performers and artists. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yes. Yeah, so performers, we always need performers for Pride and really most of our events. So we welcome performers, whether they are singers or spoken word artists or even drag performers, depending on kind of what we have going on venue. And this year, we're super excited because we're going to be partnering with Butte College and their Queer Resource Center, which is one of the only queer resource centers in the state of California at the community college level. It's a really great, safe, affirming space for our Butte College students, and it's really pretty monumental that Butte College has offered that level of space commitment to the LGBTQ community and their allies. But they're going to be doing an art show at Monca, and so we're helping sponsor that and work collaboratively with them to make sure that art show is going to be super successful. And while their show is going to mostly run during the day, we're then going to have a nice little evening reception to honor the artists and take a look at their work. And, you know, there might be a little beer and wine involved, so it should be pretty fun.
You have signs all over town, and I don't know how to use QR codes. So I got the poster, but I don't know exactly how to do it. But if people go to stonewallchico.com, is that a really good way to find out all the information they need to know, you know, how they might fit in and where they, you know, might get more information?
Absolutely. Our website really has most of the information that people are going to need to look for. We've got a whole section dedicated to Pride. There's information on how to sign up to be a volunteer. There's just information on all the different events. So, yes, our website is always a great place to go. We understand that not everybody, you know, is super technology-oriented. So if you need to, just give us a call, too. We can help give you a rundown of what's happening and give you some information of interest.
So have we covered everything about Pride for this year? You think that's pretty good?
I think so. We're super excited. We have a new events coordinator, and Justina, she has been putting in an amazing amount of work and partnering with our past events coordinator, Alyssa. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a great time.
It sounds great. You've got so much going on, and it sounds so fun, and it sounds like so nurturing in terms of community.
Yes.
Let me ask you, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the world. I know that's a big topic, but...
That is a big topic.
Andrea Mox, I wanted to, you know, as we discuss these things, I just can't help that thread of fear that runs through me all the time these days. And I'm wondering, you talk about volunteers are going to help to provide safety. And the one thing that everyone loves about Pride is just how joyful it is, how absolutely fulfilling the joy is. And I was wondering, like, what are you... Oops, you still there?
Yes.
I'm
here.
What is, you know, what are people talking about in the queer community about our risks and, you know, facing what there is to face out there, you know, of the ever-present not knowing. How are people handling it?
Yeah, it's, you know, the world is a really difficult place right now. You know, I mean, obviously we've got a pandemic. We have legislation that is, you know, anti-people legislation going on that certainly impacts the LGBTQ communities. You know, beyond that, it's a scary place right now. And Northern California is very rural, and we are very conservative. So there are a lot of conservative tendencies that pull into play for the LGBTQ communities. I think what we've seen really over the last year especially has been, while we're all holed up because of this COVID thing and we're only meeting on Zoom and that's how we're connecting, that has created a significant hole in people's mental health. And the need to actually physically connect with your peers, where you know you're going to be safe, with your community, has demonstrated over and over again the benefits from a mental health perspective. So, you know, we've had to really weigh that very heavily to say, you know, well, in person, there's you know, challenges, and we still have COVID. There's still a pandemic, whether or not people believe that, and people still are getting sick.
Yeah.
Plus the needs for mental health and mental health support and connection, especially for our youth. So, you know, we've been very intentional about trying to create programming and events that are safe events that will allow people to have connection, but have it be, you know, low risk. And what we've seen and what we've heard from our youth especially is how important it is for them to be able just to get together in a really safe space. And like you said, just be joyful, right? Have an opportunity to celebrate and be joyful together, and maybe shove the world away for just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot weighing on the minds of our youth, especially with all of this legislation going on. Roe v. Wade potentially being pulled away. That impacts, you know, far more than just the binary, right? We've got a whole trans community or gender nonconforming community that's impacted by Roe v. Wade and, you know, their ability to get gender-affirming health care in this precarious environment. It's really, really scary. It's a heavy, heavy burden.
It is. Yes, definitely. Well, I salute the work that you are doing and the people before you have done, and, you know, the fact that it's going to keep going and the community is going to be strong. And I was wondering about other volunteers, like how can the people who identify as cisgendered or straight, how can they be helpful to you at this moment?
Well, you know, we would love to have maybe an ally or two on our board. So if anybody's interested in that, they can certainly reach out to me. We do have... certain work at the center that just needs to be done all the time, right? Like, I would love somebody to help me with my accounting. So if there's any volunteers out there who are bookkeepers or past bookkeepers or retired folk, you know, reach out to us. We're a nonprofit, but we're a business. We still have to operate like a business, and we're very tiny. We're very small. So lots of folks out there have skills, and they probably don't even think about lending those skills to an entity like Stonewall because, you know, like you said, maybe they're an ally and they don't feel like they fit in. Everybody fits in at Stonewall. So as long as you're an ally and you've got some skills to lend, we would love to have you on board.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you again. And I just stonewallchico.net. Do I have that right?
Nope. It's close. Stonewallchico.com is our website.
Yeah, I have it, but just not on that piece of paper. Thank you, Andrea Mox, for being my guest on the Peace and Justice program. Have a wonderful Pride Month, and thank you for being my guest today on the Peace and Justice show.
Thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, stay tuned for Playing Dead. Ray Lager is in the house, and he'll be up with you soon. I have a few minutes left here, and I probably, I'm never the best guest for myself, but I did want to stay on this this issue about choice. And in regards to this, there was a press release from NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, Pro-Choice America. They did a report, which probably you haven't heard of, but I think it's important. I wanted to just see if I can draw this link for you. The report is called Translating Abortion Disinformation, the Spanish Language Anti-Choice Language. So there's a bunch of people who only speak Spanish in our country here, and there is a huge push to disseminate anti-choice disinformation to them in Spanish-language-only spaces. And it has a big impact on Spanish-speaking communities in terms of their access to both birth control and abortion. And so this NARAL report finds that Spanish-language political and advertisements from the 2020 election cycle, when they discussed abortion, along with 9 anti-choice Facebook pages with a combined audience of... Wait a minute. Wrong page. Sorry, friends. Over 2.79 million followers, several of these anti-choice pages repeatedly spread medically inaccurate information about abortion without any action from Facebook. So Facebook is not monitoring medical information to Spanish-speaking people. They are letting it just ride, and it's harmful to people because people would be able to get health care that they may need, and they're being told scary things, and so they're not being able to reach out through that fear that the misinformation brings to them. It has never been more critical for people to have access to medically accurate information about abortion, no matter the language they speak. What's clear here is that anti-choice extremists are capitalizing on social media companies' failure to moderate Spanish language disinformation. These platforms have a responsibility to limit the spread of disinformation about abortion care. Regardless of the language they speak, every person deserves to have accurate, unbiased information when making personal decisions about pregnancy and abortion care. And that's a quote from the Pro-Choice America president, Minnie Timuraju. And also, they're getting this information constantly, so it is really creating really problematic problems for the individuals themselves. All right, so what we know is going to be happening here, whoops, my screens are down, is that soon, maybe July, the U.S. Supreme Court will rule in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization in a case regarding Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban, and that is a direct challenge to Roe v. Wade. And what it will do if this leaked report is true about how they the court is going to vote, it will immediately end Roe v. Wade and the constitutional right to abortion that we have known it. In other words, the Mississippi law will be upheld. And so there's these trigger laws that are going to go into effect in 28 states. And It's very terrifying, and I don't have a guest here to talk about it today, so I'm not going to be the one talking about it too much. But we don't really know how it's going to affect California. I felt fairly good about California, but I'm not sure that I should be feeling good about California from other things I've heard. But what I wanted to just mention to you is that this whole idea of replacement, you know, this is a right-wing idea that Tucker Carlson talks about over and over again on Fox. It's part of what got this young man, this 18-year-old, going, so that he was self-radicalized from things he found online. And these people believe that they're going to be replaced because they're white. They're going to be replaced by non-white people, and it's a Jewish conspiracy. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy stuff. But I just wanted to make that link, that the same people that are encouraging this anti-choice information for Spanish-speaking people, so that these people can make choices about their family size, accurate decisions regarding abortion and family planning. These same people are the ones that are encouraging this replacement theory, right-wing Nazi based ideology. So again, I'm not good at talking about things very well, but I do really want you to realize about, you know, that this violent extremism is very, very dangerous, and a big part of how people are being radicalized and getting misinformation is online. And I think whatever anybody can do, I'm not really recommending anything because I haven't really delved into the media universe about how we actually have power there. But I do hope that all of my listeners here will, you know, step up and do what they can for information that is helpful to people, information that is going to build peace, is going to build nonviolent strengths, and rather than destroying this country by harming so many and putting fear in so many and taking away the rights of so many. So with that, I want to pretty much close out the show. I do urge you to vote. You should have a ballot. If you're in Butte County, you should have a ballot in your home by now. It was in your mailbox. Now it should be in your home. If for some reason you have lost it, you can call, you've thrown it out or something, you can call the Butte County Elections Office and get a replacement one. It may take you a minute to figure out who to vote for, but there's a lot of good people running, and it's important that your voice counts, that your vote counts. And so don't think that it's not important, because it's here in America, it is extremely important every step of the way. I think that's it for me, folks. I'm going to put on a song. It's a 4-minute song, so we'll go with that. And peace to all of you. I hope that you stay well. Wear your mask. As the last couple of guests ago, I think, said that, you know, COVID is still with us. It's still harming people. There's more and more information out there about the fact that the variants are still very dangerous, and the risks of long COVID are still there, even to healthy people. And so we just have to, indoors, need to wear a mask. And I'm saying that as a medical professional. It's not getting out there like a lot of things. It's not reaching the public. So at least protect yourselves and the people around you who you love. And anyway, I know you want me to stop talking, so I will. Here we go. Peace to you. Sorry, my CD is not, can't hear what it's doing here. For some reason, it's not coming through. Let's see. Not on that one. Not on that one. Not on that one. Okay, so I end this little season of mine with a little more Emma's Revolution. Not particularly a song I would have wanted to end with, but it's good. They're wonderful, so here you go.
A current so strong. Where are you now? Where did you stay? Do you have food? Are you okay? Where did you sleep? Are you in peace? Where are you now? Where are you? Then the crowd rushed, the guardsmen pushed through. Where are you bound? How will I know? Where will we meet? Where did you go? Where are you now? Where did you stay?
KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Mark Baker. Northern California Ballet will be performing Dracula on Friday, May 20th at 7 p.m. and Saturday, May 21st at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. at the Paradise Performing Arts Center located at 777 Nunnally